Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita. I want to say I'm hoping everyone, I know some areas there is, it's very cold and stormy. I'm hoping you guys are staying out the cold and staying warm. It's kind of warm down here, so it's kind of different than our weather when you go further south. Our caller, is this Stacy? Hello? 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 Hello?
Hey.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, I got a message from Tamika.
You got a message from Tamika?
Yeah, and she says you needed to reschedule, but
No, everything
okay.
Is fine.
Okay, great. I got panicked at the last minute. I was like, but I hadn't looked at my email all day. So when I pulled up my email, I said, wait a minute, what happened? Maybe I read it wrong. I might have read it wrong. Let's see.
Oh, no, we just had a little communication, but we're all good. We're all ready to go.
Okay, good. Ready to go. Okay, I want you to tell us about yourself first, and then we want to talk about your book, okay?
Wonderful.
Okay.
Well, I am an author from Atlanta, Georgia, born and raised. You don't find many of us ATLNs still in the Atlanta area, but from the Atlanta area. And before my writing journey began, I was an instructional trainer for many years for a large insurance company and for county government. I was an instructional trainer, and I also wrote manuals, instructional manuals for the insurance company. And it was my love of writing and, my love of reading, of literature, period, any kind, just soaking it up. And I'm like, I'm writing all this stuff for the insurance companies, maybe it's time for me to go ahead. And I had written a lot of short stories and thought, maybe it's time I go ahead and branch out and write my own novels, started writing for myself. And so that's how I got started. And then that's just kind of my background, married with child, not pregnant, but child.
you made it sound like that.
That's why I was like, let me hurry up and correct that. Let me tell you, a lot of people I know would start flipping, like, what's going on?
Wait a minute, what happened? We missed something.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Exactly. No. The child is 11, so.
Sorry? Yeah.
Yeah. He's grown. No.
Okay. Now, how many books have you written already other than this one? Have you written anything else?
Yes, I actually have written three have been complete. And two additional novels will be coming out later on in the year. The follow-up to the first one, The Knife in My Back, the follow-up will be coming out this summer, spring, summertime. And then my third novel, which is unrelated to the first two, will be coming out this fall, winter.
Oh, okay. Now, I love asking this question. When it comes to your characters, who are you patterning your characters behind, or how would I want to say that? What influences you to create the characters that you do? And talk
observation. Observation. My characters, they're not based on particular individuals, but they are based on characteristics of different individuals that I encounter.
Okay.
So, I may see, a character trait that just strikes me kind of odd, or, you know, oh, how super sweet, you know, like so sweet it's unbelievable almost. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
my characters are kind of based off of character traits that I see in people.
Okay. Now, knife in my back. I'm not going to ask you to tell the listening audience the whole story, but tell us enough where we like, okay, I got to open up this book. I got to get this book. I got to read.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, The Knife in My Back, mm-hmm. it is a story of friendship and betrayal. You
okay.
have your two main characters. You have Tamika Williams. Tamika is a really smart girl, but from the wrong side of the track, kind of a rough mm-hmm. upbringing. She's a real streetwise girl.
Mm-hmm.
She meets Brooke Mansfield. Brooke Mansfield is from a well-to-do family, very privileged lifestyle, very privileged upbringing. And those two meet as freshmen in college. They become
okay.
roommates, and that's how the friendship starts. It blossoms from there.
Mm-hmm.
And even in college, Brooke finds herself overlooking or excusing some of Tamika's behavior as, you know, oh, well, she's just been so underprivileged. We just need to give her the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And the friendship blossoms. They, you know, graduate from college, and we don't focus a lot on those college days, just the need-to-know information. And but they move out, you know, of the college dorm, start their lives. Tamika is there to help Brooke deal with some tragedies that she ends up facing in life.
Uh-huh.
And to show her appreciation, Brooke gives in to Tamika's request of allowing her to be her roommate.
Mm-hmm.
So Brooke takes her in to this posh lifestyle of hers and treats her as a sister. Meanwhile, you've got Tamika Williams, who is a taker. Everything
mm-hmm.
she does is based on what she can take from others, not just Brooke, anyone in her life, her coworkers,
mm-hmm.
her friends. She doesn't care, but she takes the most from Brooke. She abuses her friendship. She takes from her. She uses her. She just, you know, in many ways, emotionally abuses her.
Mm-hmm.
Brooke, being as naive and kind as she is, she allows this to continue against the warning of her other good friend, Mia, against,
mm-hmm.
you know, her, the advice of her lover. She allows it to continue until
mm-hmm.
Tamika takes one thing that means the most to Brooke, and it's not her man. It has nothing to do with her man. When
okay.
she crosses the line and takes that one thing that means the most to Brooke, that's
mm-hmm.
when Brooke reaches back into their past and pulls out some information that she uses to make Tamika pay for the sins that she's committed, not just against her, but against
mm-hmm.
all the people in her life.
Ah.
And it's, yeah, it's one that you don't see coming,
uh-huh.
but trust me, payback is unbelievable.
Okay.
And the behavior of Tamika in this novel is unbelievable. You know, actually, the funny thing is, it is actually believable, which makes it
uh-huh.
so unbelievable, because
uh-huh.
we all know somebody, or we know of someone, or we've had someone in our life that's a user, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly,
mm-hmm.
no matter what they do. And they have this attitude where, you owe me.
Yeah, there is, they feel entitled.
You owe me. I thought you was going to get that for me.
You are
you're
so
like,
right.
You're like, hold on. Who said you didn't talk to me about me doing anything for you? And we do. We take advantage of each other. And
yeah.
A friendship is a friendship. But that doesn't mean just because of the friendship that there's no boundary. And I think what we do is we get that mixed up.
You are so right.
You know, okay, I'm your friend. I'm going to automatically know that, you know what, I'm broke today. You know, let me call Stacey. Stacey,
mm-hmm.
you got $20? I automatically know you're going to give me $20. I'm not asking you, you know, whether or not you need the $20. It's not about you. It's almost like a little selfishness we have, the arrogance
mm-hmm.
of us to not think of someone else. We'd rather think of ourselves. You know, I don't care if you don't have enough to do anything with. I just know I need $20, and I know you being my friend and all, you're going to give me that $20.
You're going to give it to me, right. People make it They make it all about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
yep.
The sad thing is also, you are completely right. People have that sense of entitlement.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I'm supposed to have it just because I'm me.
Yeah.
And you sit and you wonder, where did this come from? How can you think like that? But if you and here's the thing I always tell women about this book, I challenge you because it's people are like, is it something I can relate to? This is so relatable for women because I challenge every woman listening, sit back for just a moment and think about the circle of women that you hang out with, if not now that you hung out with in the past. And I bet you can automatically think if I say, think of the one woman that all of you look at sometimes just a little sideways like, mm-hmm, we know you up to no good. Mm-hmm, we know you're the user. Mm-hmm, we know we got to watch out for you. There's one woman in every circle that the rest of the group, they look at a little side-eyed sometimes.
Like, man, do we have to take her with us? Does she have to really go? Because you know she's not going to act, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's like,
do we have to invite her this time? You know, and there's a little good girl. Well, we don't want her to feel left out.
Yeah. You got the sympathetic one.
You got the sympathetic one. We don't want her to feel left out, and everyone else is just thinking, yeah, we do. Really, we do.
Yeah,
you know?
We don't want to take her tonight. We don't really have to tell her where we're going. But, you know, when you come from a place where everybody, you know, I seen her out the other night. They didn't tell me they were going out.
Exactly. Or, you know, the woman that sits there and listens to you all plan. They listen to you plan your future and the things that you plan to do and everything that you're going to implement in your life. And they sit there and they encourage you in it. And then you turn around and lo and behold, they've implemented everything you talked about before you could.
Oh, my God, stop it.
That is the knife in my back. I'm just
But do you, okay, I like that concept because we were talking about that the other day, how I guess to a certain extent it's good to be a trendsetter. I mean, when I say trendsetter, you're the one who comes out with this great idea and then, you know, somebody else wants to do it too. And you're like, okay, you go ahead. I'm proud that you want to do it because that means that I had something, I had a great idea first and foremost.
Right.
But the idea that you didn't want to sit down and talk to me and tell me that you were going to steal it, that's a whole other ball game, you know.
It's an entirely different situation.
That's why
sometimes
it's good to keep stuff to yourself. You don't need to share everything with everybody. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, even your closest friend, not to say that you don't trust them, but there's certain things you just don't tell your closest friends. You just don't. You know,
you just exactly. They have that little, you know, acronym TMI for a reason.
You can't give
too much information. Everyone doesn't need to know everything.
Everything. That's right. And it's amazing that us as African Americans come from a unique gene. Our heritage, our lineages. Is a very unique one. So we really don't have to duplicate each other. And that's what amazes me about us, that we do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have to. We come from a vast of talent and we steady find ourselves doing something someone else is doing. Not because it's more of, okay, if they already got that plan in action, all I got to do is make it happen. You know,
they're playing.
I don't have to work at it. I'll just take because they're taking people. You got to understand that friend is a taker. So it's easy for her to take because that's all she knows. I'm selfish and I'm going to take all I can take.
You know, and I mean, and there are some people that, like the character Tamika, that have had, you know, a hard way in life, and they feel the only way they can get ahead, despite the fact that she is a brilliant girl, you know, and that she's a great success in her own right, despite all that, she feels like her only way to get ahead is by taking from others. You know what I mean? You can't wait for it to be handed to you. You have to take it. You have to take it. There's that mentality, you know, of me struggling all my life and I have to take it. But they don't realize that there is an extent to that. And when you are blessed enough to have your own and to be able to make your own, that's what you need to do. They're so afraid of blazing the trail, you know, they want to run up behind your trail and cut you off.
Exactly. Instead of going in a whole different direction than you're going, I'm going to go right behind you.
But, you know, so many women seem to be afraid of that.
Yeah.
Of blazing their own trail. It's like they all sometimes seem to cluster, you know, to the same idea, to the same path, you know, and then it's a race to see who can get to the top the fastest.
Okay.
You know, when that may not even be their passion.
So, now that you said that, that's good that you said that because it's making a point. Now, when you said that, that made me think about something. What about if you're with people who are like-minded? How does that fit into it? Because you said something very, very important and very to the point when you said people are afraid, women are seem to be afraid of, you know, having their own way of going, they want to follow behind you. Do you think it's because they're like-minded like you? They think on the same, in the same terms that you do?
I think in a lot of instances, there are, you know, we do flock together in certain groups because we are like-minded. We all have a certain thing that's a passion. The difference, that's the difference is the women or the woman that follows that trail. And it's something she's never thought of before. I'm gonna be an author. Really, how much have you written in your lifetime? How much do you read? I'm not really a big reader.
You know what?
But it's a lot of writers out there doing real well right now, and I got some stories in me, girl. You know, so that's the difference in hanging out and networking and being in an environment with like-minded people as opposed to someone being afraid to blaze their own trail. That would be like me saying, you know what, I want to be a doctor. I'm scared of the sight of blood.
Yes. You are so right. Because you said something that's very funny. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I had I interviewed when I was on my other show, Lily's Author Showcase, I interviewed an author, and I don't know if it's a male or female, I can't remember, but this person actually said they don't read, and we were like, what? We were sitting there.
How can you be an author and not read?
We were like, what? We could not believe it. I think it was a female. Was it a female? Yeah. She said, I don't like to read. Huh? You wrote a book.
You know... Exactly. So that would be the prime example of someone just, you know, inserting themselves in a situation. It's not their calling. It's not something they have a passion for. It's just they're running up behind someone else's trail. They haven't found that thing that gets them excited yet. They haven't found that passion, you know. And so, you know, that right there is a prime example of the difference between being with like-minded people and just being a follower of, you know, what they may perceive as a fad or, you know, what's just going to maybe make them quick money. And that's the hilarious thing. People think that, you know, writing books makes you quick money.
You know. That's not true. That's not true. And I've met a lot of people who want to write. Yes, Lita, I want to write. When can you? And I'm listening to them because they're only doing it because they hear me talk to the authors on the show, or they see me I've done something. But they're not really serious about it because when I ask you about it, and you don't have. Well, let me see what you got. Oh well, I'll have to bring it to you. Okay, all right. And you never see it. you just, and they look at the idol, they think you're having so much fun talking to these people, literally telling you about who they are and how they've done things, and they talk about the character in the book, and they get excited, which is normal. That's great, because I love listening to other people's stories. But don't have me think that you really want to do something and you really don't want to do it. Don't say, I want to write children's books. Okay, all right, okay, you want to write children's books? Okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you going to show me something? I'll get it to you. Okay, you got my email address. You can always just drop me an email. You know, it's not hard. You know, but I know they're not serious about it. That's why. Don't waste my time. Don't waste my time if you're not serious about that. Really.
Right.
Because so many people out there I can help, or I could assist in, or send them in the right direction of who they can talk to or who they can deal with in order to get whatever they want done. But don't waste my time, because I'm not going to waste yours. I just don't. But you're right. We have to start doing our own thing. And like I said before,
right.
It's too much talent out there. It's too many things God gifted us with that we can do ourselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to follow behind anybody. We can be originals. We are the original people, so we can be original. There's nothing
exactly.
in our team saying we can't be, you know. But I think, too, it has a lot to do with the way we bond, women bond.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. Go ahead, Bella.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're the guest, damn it.
No, I was just going to say, you're right. And that's one thing that I don't want people to think that, you know, is being omitted from this conversation. And that's
mm-hmm.
that women do bond, that there is
yes.
that strong bond. You know, we're talking about just a specific type of woman that unfortunately we all kind of know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
female relationships, they just fascinate me, period. You know, the way we communicate with one another, the way we bond with one another, the way we rely on each other, it's a beautiful thing. And so it's when you have that camaraderie and you have those friends that bond, you know, you can still bond with one another. You can have a true friendship. You can, you know, encourage one another. But you can still encourage one another in your own path. You can encourage your friends down their path.
Mm-hmm,
without
mm-hmm.
having to follow them if you know that that's not what's meant for your life.
Exactly. And then,
you know, and that's, you know, this girl in the book, Tamika, bless
mm-hmm.
her heart, she doesn't know how to encourage others. She doesn't know how to, you know, blaze her own trail without, you know, figuring out, well, I can benefit from her somehow, or, let me just take what
mm-hmm.
she's got. There's a way to encourage one another, to be there
mm-hmm.
for one another, to stand up
mm-hmm.
for one another without having to walk the same path as each
exactly.
other. And
exactly.
it's so funny that one of my dear friends actually was so encouraging with my writing
mm-hmm.
that she was like, you know what, we are going to go ahead because this is what you need to be doing. And we had read a book that was co-authored, a really good book that was co-authored by two best friends. And we read it, and it was like, I was like, yeah, I got to do this. She was like, yeah, let's write a book together. Well, okay, we'll write the book together. She came over to my house. We started writing. I think after brainstorming, am I sitting down, and I just start typing. And by the second paragraph, she was like, okay, yeah, you're not listening to a word I have to say, and honestly, what I have to say is not making much sense anyway. She was like, so now that you're off and gone, let me go over here and do my thing. You know, and she followed her path, which is she's a phenomenal interior decorator. The girl has a gift, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And we are the best of friends. And she's going down her path. I'm going down mine. But we are still there to support one another, to encourage one another, to support each other in our work.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not trying to infringe upon each other's gifts. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So with Tamika, okay, in the book, Tamika, do you talk about her her childhood?
I do. I go back, and her mother plays a big part in the book as well.
Okay.
Her mother, we talk about her background, her brothers, you know, they grew up in the project, you know, and one brother, you know, passed away from gun violence, you know, from gang violence. Another brother is in prison, and her mother is there. And her mother is a strong woman, you know, who made her own fair share of mistakes over the years. But she's always been there to support her family. But all Tamika can see when she looks at her mother is everything that she does not want to be.
So she wants to be totally opposite of who her mother is.
Exactly. All she sees when she looks at her mother is everything she doesn't want to be. But what she fails to connect, the thing she fails to connect with her mom, she fails to connect with her mom's strength. She fails to connect with her mother's character and her strong belief in God. You know, all she sees is, you know, where has that strength and all of, you know, your religious talk, where has it gotten you? Because you're still living here in the hood. And this is, and all she sees is what she doesn't want to be.
So she has like a sort of anger toward her mother because of the way her mother is.
Yeah, she's resentful. She thinks her mother is, she loves her mom. And, you know, she provides, she helps to provide for her mom. Because, again, she's a smart woman that has a career. It's just, she just wants more, you know. It's never enough. And so she loves her mother, but there's just not a high level of respect for her mother. It's not a high level of respect for the life that her mother has carved out for herself. And that is what she doesn't want. So she looks at her mother. She looks at her mother's living situation, her love situation, and it's everything that she does not want. And so she's willing to do whatever is necessary to secure for herself a good life where there is money. You know, yes, I may love this man, but if this man is not making the kind of money I want, then we're going to have a problem.
Okay, now,
you know,
does she work?
Oh, yeah, she works. Tamika is, she is ultimately a news anchor at a television station. Yeah, she starts out as a producer and ultimately is an anchor. But the interesting thing is how she got to be the anchor. So she was doing very well as a producer. But again, there is no limit to what she'll do to get what she wants. And she, in her mind, you know, hey, to be the anchor, to be seen, she wants to be important. That's the most, that's what she sees. All she sees are the people, you know, the public see as important. You know, it doesn't matter how they gain their fame or they know their notoriety. It's they're important because they're seen, and that automatically, in her mind, that breeds respect. And so she does what she has to do to become the anchor, which y'all will find wildly entertaining. You know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and you know what? It's actually people like that. So you did describe.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there are definitely people like that.
But you know what? And that's the reason why I asked about the childhood, because when I think of how we are as women, I always go back to our childhood, simply because something down in our childhood created us in some type of way, created us to be the women that we are. It's not only just our family and our moms and our dads and our, it's also what our environment was like. And you said something that was very, very, very true. You or made a point when you said she did everything not to be like her mom. But in other people's eyes, like probably in your eyes, her mom was a hero. But she resented it. And you know what? There might be a possibility other kids looked up to her mom. That where she lived at in the neighborhood. There might have been a possibility.
The funny thing is that in the novel, you'll see over time that Brooke develop a very close relationship with Tamika's mother. While Tamika has no respect for her mother, Brooke does. Brooke thinks she is, you know, the sweetest thing since cinnamon rolls. And she looks to her and she respects her. She has so much respect for Tamika's mother. And the funny thing is, Tamika resents the relationship. It's one other thing. It's just one more thing for her to resent. And that's the relationship that builds between Brooke and her own mother.
Man.
She wants her mother to be happy. But if Brooke is the one providing that happiness, she'd rather her mother do without.
Man. So how can Brooke call her? That's not a friend. How does Brooke get the definition of a friend out of that?
You know what? Brooke is just this, bless her heart. She's smart. And, you know, down south, when we say bless your heart, it usually means you poor dumb child. So bless her heart. She's a smart girl. She's a beautiful girl. She's a wealthy girl, but she is so naive. She is painfully naive. And yes, the sad thing is, those people actually do exist in the world. Painfully naive. And so she is constantly giving Tamika the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
You know,
no matter what,
even
she
when
does.
She. Yeah, even when she is fed up with Tamika and Tamika just crosses the line and Brooke puts her foot down and, you know what, you got to go. You got to get out. This is over. It's a wrap. You got to go. Get out of my house. She still ends up being conned by Tamika into, you know, allowing Tamika to stay just a little while longer.
Sound like a man.
Yeah. Tamika has that kind of mentality.
Yeah.
You know, of a possessive man who has just spun a web.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you say that because the men in the novel, men love the book because there's nothing male bashing about it. These guys, they are like knights in shining armor. The most twisted male would be Tamika because she has spun a web of, like, you know, an abusive man.
So Tamika is off the chain, in other words.
Oh, you have no idea. Oh, Salita, she is beyond off the chain. She's twisted. She really is. And it's sad because you know people like that, not to Tamika's extent, but you can recognize little flakes of Tamika's personality in people that you know. Like I said, not to the extent of Tamika, but it's there. And her behavior, her mentality of just take, 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 and you owe me this. You know, life owes me this.
Exactly.
You know, I didn't have what you had growing up, so I should have it now. And if you don't want to give it to me, I'm more than happy to take it from you. The choice is yours, but either way, I'm going to have it. And that's her mentality. And if you get something that she is unable to have, she'll find a way to take that too. Because if I can't have it, you can't have it. If I'm going to be miserable, we're all going to be miserable. It's like, so you can either give me what I want and we can all be happy, or you can keep it for yourself and we'll all, if I'm going to be sad, we're all going to be sad.
How did I'd have to let go of friends like that. I don't think I could have a friend like that at all. No.
Oh, I know I couldn't.
No.
I couldn't. Yeah, she would have to go. And but the thing is, you know, you see people and you, that's why I say female relationships, they just fascinate me. And you see friends, you know, you can go to the mall and see women out enjoying themselves, the girls' day out, you know, or go to the spa, and, you know, it can be two or three women, and one is always along for the ride, not because she doesn't necessarily have the money, but because mm-hmm. she has somehow came up with some sob story, it's always a sob story. It's mm-hmm. always something. And so they're walking through the mall, and she's holding the majority of the bags, and it all belongs to her, but she hadn't paid for any of it.
In the drawer.
You know?
In other words, she pimping all the other friends out to buy for her.
Yeah, you know?
I left my wallet. Oh, you didn't give
exactly.
me enough money. You know, she got excuse for every store they stop in. But she
exactly.
ain't
going out
to go without
nothing. Oh, you know, oh, I wish I could go to the spa with y'all, but they messed up my check at work.
Yeah.
And, oh, girl, come on. You know we got you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of how that goes. But, yeah, like I said, guys, though, the men, they'll love it because the one thing this is not a male bashing book.
Uh-huh.
And there are some really strong male figures in this book. And
no.
there are guys that women love. They're not pushovers. They're not suckers. You know, they're not wimps. They're strong men that are holding it down, that are holding their women down, that are respectful to their women. You know, it's all good with the men.
Now,
so,
do either one of them have a boyfriend? Do Tamika have a boyfriend? Does Brooke have a boyfriend or they don't?
Tamika totally has a boyfriend. Brooke gets a boyfriend, and she ends up marrying her boyfriend. So, yeah, Brooke ends up engaged and married. Tamika has a very devoted boyfriend. There is another supporting character in the book, Mia. Mia is a dear friend of Brooke's as well, who does not trust Tamika at all.
And
she shares this with Brooke every chance she gets. You know how you try to bring two friends together. You have a friend, you know, you have a couple of friends that don't know each other, but you try to bring them together and they mix like oil and water.
That would be Mia
and Tamika.
Yes, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And she's steady trying to tell her, you need to cut this chick loose. Listen to me. And she
Brooke, she's just taking the advantage of you, you know. And,
so
but Brooke is, you know, you don't understand.
Yes.
You know, she didn't grow up like we did. You've got to give a benefit of a doubt. She just needs someone to help her along the way. You know, Brooke wants to be the savior.
Yeah, and Brooke wants to be the enabler, too. Sounds like she enabled her in her wrongdoing and everything that she does. She completely did.
The best thing Brooke could have done for Tamika would have been to take her to church and leave her there. But she didn't.
She would probably walk out with the pastor. They're what you call toxic friends. They're toxic, what you consider toxic friends.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, you know, there are those friendships. And they're not, you know, there are people that are not nearly as bad as Tamika,
mm-hmm.
but still, they're just not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you've known them since you were 8, you
yeah.
know, or y'all were first roommates in college. And so there is a bond on some level, and you don't want to just turn your back on them, you know, but it's not until they just
really
cross the line.
Mm-hmm.
That you come to the realization of, God, I should have left them go a long time ago.
And you know what? Just what came to my mind, and I totally forgot about it. That happened to me. I'm sitting up here talking about her, dude. That happened to me.
Oh, Lord.
At work, it was this chick. She moved from one department, and she wound up in our department. And somebody already had it out that, you know, hey, she's bad news. And me, being who I was like, you guys, y'all shouldn't say that about her. She's not that bad. No, she's not that. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I had egg all over my face when the whole situation was over with. I had egg on my face. And I was so devastated. And, you know, people didn't want to come to me and say, I told you so. But you could feel it in the air when you walk in the room.
You could see it all over their face, couldn't you?
You could see it all over. Homegirl did me so, oh, my God, she did me so wrong. And I said to myself, I said, never again, never, ever again. And everybody's like, I told you, I told you. And I was like, oh, my God, I was so embarrassed. I was so mad, you know. And she's
but
a,
see,
a,
you had to learn
liar.
That lesson.
Yeah, I had to learn. And I.
But you had to learn that lesson. I mean, it'll never happen to you again because now you know what to look for. You know when something is not right. But it was a lesson you had to learn. And, I mean, it's the same thing with the knife in my back. It's a lesson Brooke had to learn.
Yeah.
You can't save everybody. You can't be everybody's friend. Everybody is not meant to be in your life. It's a situation, you know, the old adage, people are meant to be in your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime.
Yes.
You got to learn to figure out quickly what they're in your life for. And she didn't figure out until it was a little too late that Tamika was in her life just for a season. That season should have been freshman college. And
yes.
After that, it was a wrap.
Right there. We got a caller. Let's see who this is. 757, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Fine.
Hey.
You want to make a comment?
Excuse me?
Yeah, did you want to make a comment?
I want to know how do you feel about old friends that, you know, you met in Panama?
Oh, Stacy, this is my, oh, my God. We go, how far do we go back, Felicia? Panama. We go back over 20-something years, right?
Yes, we do.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Hi,
sweetie.
Hi, love.
How's everything
going? I'm doing fine.
Now, you can talk about friendships, can't you?
Yes, and they are very few and far between, trust me.
Exactly, exactly. We have been through hell together, didn't we?
Yes.
We broke up friends for a second, didn't we?
Excuse me?
I said, didn't we break up friends for a second?
No, we didn't really break up friends for a second and stuff.
We just kind of discommunicated.
You act like a kid with somebody taking their lollipop and speaking to me.
So we've been through some stuff together, Stacy. So friendship, I know what a true friendship is. And this girl right here, I can truly say she was a very true friend. I mean, and it was so crazy how we met. And I was mad at her when I originally met her. Didn't I get mad at you?
Yeah, she was mad at me with a bunch of other little young girls that didn't know me.
That was us following the crowd when we were talking earlier about following everybody.
Oh,
I know
okay.
How that feels.
So
and
you were following the
became,
crowd on that one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Me and her became sisters.
I mean,
now, see, that's wonderful.
Together.
But like you said in the beginning, those
mm-hmm.
are few and far between. So you have to cherish that. You really have to hold on to that.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Oh, my God, yes. Oh, my God. How's everything going?
Everything is lovely. You know, I called in to, you know, break in on your conversation because, you know, I was listening to it. And
oh
stuff, but
God.
I'm not going to hold you up, love. Back and talk to your guests.
Okay, we shall talk later.
All righty. Love you.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. That is so, that's wonderful. I love that. I love that. That's my girl. But yeah,
and you just sound so thrilled that you hear from her. You're just like, you know. Now, that's wonderful. That's beautiful. That's what I was referring to earlier when I was like, you know, let's not downgrade the real friendship.
Yes,
because
definitely.
They're out there, they are beautiful, and, you know, we wouldn't know what to do without our girls.
Oh, my. And it's so weird. Her birthday is on the 15th of February. Mine's on the 16th. Her birthday is the same day as my oldest sister's birthday. Exact
oh, wow.
Same. Yeah. And it's like we've been through hell and back together. We wind up, we're both stationed in Panama. That's how I met
mm-hmm.
her. And we went through hell. I'm telling you, 20 years, we went through some stuff. We went through some stuff together. But that was my girl. We stayed. That was my girl. Lord Jesus. The many day I cried on her shoulder, the many day she cried on mine. Lord, mercy.
That's what true friendship will do for you.
That's
the kind of relationship that Brooke and Mia have in the book. That's their relationship. It's, it's unbreakable. It's unbeatable. It's a true friendship, you know?
And you know what?
And respect, you know.
And see, Mia, Felicia, her name is Felicia. Felicia was like Mia to me because she forewarned me about several people that I was dealing with and I would not listen. She forewarned me about boyfriends that I had that would just do, they were dogging me out, and she was ready to fight them. That's how she couldn't stand them. And it did not go through my head. I was acting like Brooke. These guys are no good for you, Felicia. What the hell are you doing? She was like going off on me. What the hell are you doing? You should... But I just could not see.
You couldn't see it.
You can't see for the tree. How they say the forest for the trees?
Can't see the forest for the trees.
Oh, so much was going on, and she was steady trying to warn me, and I didn't want to hear it. I did not want to hear it. I did not want to hear it. I wanted somebody, I guess, too. There was a time when, you know, when you want to be loved and you want that attention, and whatever way you can get it, you'll get it.
Exactly.
And I think that's what it was. Oh, my God. But you know what? Life teaches you a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff.
It does.
God teaches
you know,
and life teaches you.
Like my mom says, all you have to do is live long enough.
Yes, that's right.
All you have to do is live long enough. Every lesson, everything, it will all just become clear as a bell.
Exactly.
Every stupid thing you ever did. You know? Every dumb friendship you ever tried to hold on to. And
exactly.
The ones you regret letting go.
Letting go. That's wonderfully said. I like that. I like that. I love that. Now, what other book do you have after this one? Are you going to do a sequel to this one?
There is a sequel to this one, The Knife in My Back 2. And once you read this one, the thing is that you could read The Knife in My Back 2 without having to read this one, but oh my gosh, it's so much better if you read The Knife in My Back first, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it picks up with Tamika kind of picking up the pieces of her life and figuring out where to go now, you know, who can she turn to now? And remarkably, her boyfriend, Wayne, is still there with her, still by her side, you know, after everything that's happened and everything he found out about her, he's still there with her, you know, ready to, you know, help provide for her, help her pick up the pieces. But their relationship takes a very interesting twist. And this book also, it focuses on Brooke, of course. She's there with her family and how her family has grown and, you know, how they've settled into their routines and, you know, how she's now dealing with Tamika and trying to weed even the memories of Tamika out of her, you know, and just finding it impossible to do. She can't even weave the memories of Tamika out of her head. And then you have book Mia. The book gives the second book, The Knife in My Back 2, it brings Mia a little more to the forefront.
Okay.
And it deals with Mia's relationship. She's now married, and it deals with her relationship and her family and, and the struggles that she's going through and the problems that she's having with her husband. And the funny thing is the book actually brings – Mia and Tamika, it makes Mia and Tamika cross paths in a way that they never expected. And so it puts Brooke in such a peculiar position of trying to be there for her friend and be the friend to Mia that Mia was to her. But in order to do that, she's going to have to tolerate some aspect of Tamika being there. And it's just not something she can deal with. It's just not something she can deal with. And so it's like, will Brooke and Mia's relationship, would their friendship now survive because of the choices that Mia is making? You know?
Yeah, that's a big twist.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's a big twist. I like that.
Definitely.
I like that. Man. So is that, you saying that one's already out?
That one is going to come out this spring, summer.
Okay.
Time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
so it won't be too long. I'm sorry.
I was talking over you. I apologize. I was saying, do you write full time or do you work? Are you still in the working force?
Right now, I am writing. Right now is just my thing. I'm writing full time now.
Gotcha.
And it's such an exciting thing. Because this first book, The Knife in My Back, that book was written between the hours, and the funny thing is I still write during those hours, but that book was written between the hours of midnight and 3 a.m. every night.
Oh, my God.
Over the course of a year because, you know, I'm married, I'm a mom, I was holding down a full-time job, you know. After the house got quiet, you know, and everything was settled and it was just me, I could come in here in my office at midnight, and that's when I could just, you know, have my time to write, you know. And so that was hard, you know, because you're turning around and getting back up at the crack of dawn to go to work. But now I have the luxury of being able to stay home and just write, concentrate on my writing, concentrate on new storylines and new characters and building them up. But not just that, but also going back and taking other little classes myself, you know,
to brush up
on things. Because you want to stay current. You want to stay on top of your game. Because if this is what you really love and this is what you really want to do, you want to give it your all. And if that means going back and, you know, taking a literature class here or taking, you know, just brushing up on things, you know, that's what you do. And so fortunately, I've been afforded that opportunity. So it's exciting for me.
Oh, man, that is awesome. Awesome to be able to relax, quiet. My problem is my son's grown. It's just me and my husband and my two dogs, and I still, well, I'm going to school, too, at the same time. But I still, and also, oh, never mind. I need to take that back because I got my plate full. I can't just say I can relax. Because not only do I do this show, I co-host a local show with a friend of mine on one of the local radio stations. And then we do investigations, like we look at stuff, we research stuff. So it's I can't say that I have a quiet time yet.
Okay.
I have to force
myself. You know what? I know where you were heading with that, and I can relate because I do have the quiet time. And sometimes you still find your mind wandering or you still find yourself up at your son's school. I'm like, why did I sign up to be a room mom and all these parents are calling me? I'm like, really?
You know what?
So, you know, you still have distractions.
Yeah, you have all the extra distractions. I'm doing everything. My son's gone. I don't even have to, you know, he's grown. But it's like I'm always trying to find something else to fill in my day. I'm like, what else do I don't need anything else. I need to just stick with what I'm doing now and keep moving. And when I find quiet time, I it's not quiet for me. My brain, my mind's got stuff going in characters and stuff. I'm writing like 3 or 4 different books right now. I'm not lying. 3 or 4 different books.
See, that's awesome, though. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
It's not good when you got all these little people in your head telling you, no, you can do this, you can do that. You can't get them to stop. Stop the noise.
You're like, stop the noise. Yeah, turn down the volume.
I need to take my
medicine. It's funny, you know, but it's funny, though. I think it's like that for so many authors. You have all these thoughts, all these things running through your head. And, you know, and my mom looks at me like I'm crazy all the time because we're sitting and having a conversation and she'll say something and it just hits me and I'm like, oh, where my pen? Where my pen? She's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, no, just think about what you said. That's a good book. That's a good book. And she's like, oh, for the love of God.
Oh, my God. I have another friend of mine that she talks and the things that she tells me, it could never really happen, but I know it does happen. So I'm in the process of taking her character. She don't know all of it yet, so I'm getting to put her character in the book. These crazy things that happen to her. But you have to write it down. I'm like, okay, yeah, okay, that happened here. Okay, okay, that happened here.
Oh,
then
yeah.
I have this revenge book I got going on. When you have no other way of getting back at someone, you don't want to hurt them physically or anything, so you write a revenge book.
Put it in a book. Oh, yeah, put it. And people ask me, is this based, are these based off real characters? Is this a true story?
That's what I
No, asked. It's not a true story, but again, characteristics of people that you teach or that you know, they find a way to make it into the pages of the book. They really do. So
and
it's like you're reading the book and you see that crazy person. Sit back and look at yourself and wonder, now I know her. Is she trying to say something?
One of my books I wrote, the characters in it is like, sweet, is that you? No, that wasn't me. I promise you. Is that you and your husband? Did that really happen? I said, you guys know it was about a couple. I said, no, it's not me and my husband. No, I don't have that to worry with. This was just a story that was in my head. Well, you need to write a part two. No, it was in my head. It's out. It's on paper. It's done. I'm not
writing.
It's
over now.
Yeah, that's it. I can't write two. I have to move on to the next story, because if I don't, all these other stories, I won't be able to have a chance to write. I can't do it.
I have to be honest with you, Selena. Now, I did the sequel to The Knife in My Back, and that's coming out. And my girlfriend, she has actually read it, and it's like, is there going to be a part three? I'm like, no. No. The follow-up was written in a way. Where are they going to come back from? No, there's nowhere for anybody to come back from. It is a wrap. It is over. Because now I have so many different things in my head that I'm like, okay, I've said everything that I care to say about them, to them. I don't, they'll work it out from here on. But I'm done with them,
It's time to move on, in other words. Okay, project. It's time for me to move on to the next project. It's somebody else that wants to hear another different type of story, so let me get to them.
Exactly. I'm like, no, there's some people over here that have a story to tell. They want their story told. I have to get to them now. And sequels are great. I don't know that I'll ever even write another one. These words will probably come back to bite me in the butt.
Yeah, it's
but I just don't know that I ever will, because, what I'm writing on now, and as I write, I find myself wanting to include, issues that are so relevant to society today, issues of domestic violence or,
issues
of people dealing with, like, sickle cell disease. And, this is an opportunity to not only entertain, but to shed a light, on just issues that are going on every day, problems that people are dealing with, And you have all these ideas. It's like I have all these ideas over here. I have just like a whole file in my poor iPhone. All the memory is taken up on the notes, because when I'm out and I don't have paper, I type it up in my phone, so there are so many other stories to tell.
I know, and you are so right. You said two main ones. I had Miss Ernestine Moore. I interviewed her about the domestic violence and the sexual abuse. And then I had a lady that I interviewed on my other show about sickle cell. So, yeah, you can hit each one. Like, one of my stories I did was about paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh, wow.
And one person asked me, like, how you know about that? It's called reading and researching. I mean, that's not hard to do. That's what you do before you write, right? You do your reading and researching. So she's like, I don't need to know personally about it. I'm just writing a story, but I need to make sure my facts kind of line up to how it really is when you're using fictional characters with a real situation. You got to know how to, write and research before you write to know that you're getting this character and they actually have this disease or whatever. and it fits just right. And that's what I try to do. But they, I mean,
and people, and people don't realize the resources. I don't know about other writers, but the resources that are used. Oh, please, I have to go to my doctor. You know, you going for just a regular yearly appointment or something, your physical or whatever. They're a great resource. They will tell you every medical thing you need to know. You know, asking questions, using reliable, knowledgeable resources. And the thing is, even with the, this is something that actually comes into play in the Knife in My Back 2 that'll be out this summer. And that's the sickle cell issue that I started dealing with. And that is something that a lot of people don't know, but I actually have firsthand knowledge of because me and my two sisters all have sickle cell anemia. But it's not, it's a disease that so few people really know anything about, you know?
Exactly.
And so with Mia, as I told you, Mia is going to really take, you know, a lead story in the sequel. And she'll have to deal with the effects of sickle cell on her child, you know, and how that affects the marriage, you know, the dynamics of their marriage and all of that and their family as a whole. And you know, it's a great way to entertain and spread knowledge to make people aware, you know, because that's something that predominantly affects, you know, just us African Americans, you know. Predominantly, I mean, there's a small percentage, you know, of others that are affected by it, but it's a very small percentage.
Yeah, they call it the black people disease.
Exactly, exactly. And because of that, you know, you just don't hear a lot of information about it. You don't, there's not like a lot of literature out there about it. There's, you don't hear a lot about research and all of that, you know. So I thought this is a great opportunity. You know, let me get my little two cents in about this here. You know,
and,
make people aware.
And, you know, that you can use that one. You got alcoholism. Well, you know, they talk about alcoholism and drugs all the time. But those rare diseases that are not talked about would be so, you know, amazing to get the information out and use it in, you know, in the story. Depression, because I suffer, I can truly say, I suffer from depression. I also suffer from PTSD. So, I can relate to the schizophrenia to a certain extent, but I am going to write my story about the PTSD also. That's coming out.
Okay.
You know, so I have a way of, I'm learning all I can learn about what I'm going through so that I'm able to, you know, put it, you know, in a story. Not necessarily my story, but a story. And with White Dove, the schizophrenia, that's one of the symptoms. Depression is part of the schizophrenia. I wouldn't have known that if I don't, you know, experience it. So you do have to have the knowledge of what, when you are, you have an illness or a sickness that you're keen on, you want it to be a important part of that story. It's very important to know what you're talking about. It really is.
Exactly.
It is very so much to be know exactly what you're talking about in a story. Oh, my God.
There is the only thing. The only thing worse than, you know, writing about something, there is, you know, you're writing fiction, so there is some leeway. It's not a true story, and you can say things, and you can get away with some things, but when you're talking about actual illnesses, you know, true life situations, there can be nothing worse than not doing your research. The last thing in the world, even though I'm affected by it, it can be such a complicated disease. It affects everyone differently. And it would be a tragedy for me to write about it without consulting, you know, a physician and really getting that information, because there's already not enough out there about it. And so to put out incorrect information, that would be horrible.
Exactly.
That, you know, you have creative license to make up stories and do all of that, but the one thing you want to keep true are the facts about illnesses that really affect people's lives. Like you say, the you know, depression and all of that. That's something, you know, because you're entertaining, but to get that chance to inform and enlighten, that's a privilege to be able to do that.
Exactly. And you have the knowledge, because everybody can't write it. You got to understand, that's why a lot of people, basically some people stay in a certain genre or a certain way of writing, because everybody don't know how to intertwine an illness or a tragedy in their story. You understand what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? When you think about rape, everybody can't do a story about rape. You know?
Oh, no.
Because you just can't. It's like an illness. You can't do it. You have to, I can't say that nobody can't do it, but you got to be able to feel what it is. Like, I can watch something on television, and I can almost feel what that person is feeling because
mm-hmm.
I'm in tune to that person. I can't just sit there and write, okay, this person went crazy, okay. But if I don't feel what she's doing, I can't, you know, you can't write it. It's not going to come out on paper like you want it to from your head. It's not going to come out.
Right.
So it's good to do your research about different things, learn about them before you write about them. And most writers do that. Most of them do. The fly-by-night writers is not the same thing, not to disrespect anybody in their craft. But some
right.
people write just to say, I wrote, instead of taking it and being serious about it, too. You understand what I'm saying? They just write to say, like we said earlier about, if you write, you got somebody else who want to write just like you. How do you do it? Well, I can't tell you everything, but you got to tell me exactly how you do it. And when you tell them how to do it, they take your idea, like you said.
You know, you're sitting there reading your book, and you're like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
This sounds really familiar. I don't know anyone who's ever done that. Writers, hey, I love everybody. I'm not helping anybody. But
now,
that's pretty funny.
If you throw me an idea and you say, and I always ask, I have an idea. As a matter of fact, he's an author. Me and him was talking, and he got this great idea. So I kept saying, I just told him, I said, you know, I'm stealing your idea. He said, no, you're not stealing it. He said, you can freely have it. I said, no, I feel like I'm stealing it because you keep talking, and I'm listening to what you're saying, but I'm listening to it from another angle than what the way you're making it come out. So I told him, and he's like, you're not stealing it. Don't keep saying you're stealing it. You're not stealing it. But to me, in my heart, I was like, damn, I'm trying to steal this man. I'm trying to steal
this man. I'm trying to steal his idea.
I need to tweak it. I need to tweak it to work for me.
No, see, you can't really say it's stealing. He's giving you permission.
He has given me permission.
So, hey, you're safe with that.
Yeah, I feel better now. But
you're safe with that.
So, Arthur,
it's just
because
he kept saying, and he told you, oh, yeah, I'm going to write this book, and it's going to, and this is because this is such a great act, and this, and he's telling you everything. And then next thing he hears you on your show promoting your book, and he's like, man, that would be a Tamika move.
Yeah, that would be a Tamika move. Yeah, you're right. That's why I like talking to people. I love the, you just don't know. This is my love. Interviewing authors is my true love, okay? Because you guys are so full of information. You are so full of things that people don't normally, because we're so creative, and we're
mm-hmm.
not like everybody else. We're like artists. We don't fall in with everybody else. We don't, because of our imagination and how we see things. It's not
mm-hmm.
the same. So authors don't have the same as an everyday John. We just don't have it. It's different.
Right.
So I like to hear all the fascinating stories. I love to hear the characters. I love the idea of hearing even your true life, your life itself. How did you come about doing this? That's one of my favorite questions to ask a person. First, tell me about yourself. Because then when I'm
mm-hmm.
listening to how you explain who you are, it's like, okay, now let her explain her book. Then I can, you know, you can kind of put them together. Some of you can, and some of them, boy, they, ooh, like, okay. You know, I can't, you know, I don't know, but okay. I learned so much, man. I love it. This is what I want you to do, because we still got a couple of minutes.
Okay.
I want I want you to tell us how we can get a copy of your book.
You can get a copy of my book at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. I would love for everyone to visit my website, which is www.stacycovingtonlee.com. That's my name.com.
Okay.
And if you go to my website, you can read a full chapter excerpt of The Knife in My Back. You can also get a sneak peek at the upcoming novel, The Knife in My Back 2.
Okay.
And just find out a little information about me. You can see my calendar of events and where I'm going to be. I'll be appearing in Miami next month at Jazz in the Gardens. I'll also have tour dates in New Orleans during the Essence Festival.
Yeah, you coming down for the Essence Festival?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I'll also be down in my mind is going blank now. So I'm gonna be in I'm gonna be in Miami, I'm gonna be in New Orleans for the Jazz Festival. I'm going to be in Memphis for the there's another event happening in Memphis, and so I'm gonna be out in Memphis. And you can just go to my website again, that's www.stacycovingtonlee.com, and see my entire calendar of events. And so I'm really looking forward to it. We just got back, Delphine Publications just got back from a book fair up in Washington at Howard University. It was a great event. And so we're looking forward to doing, you know, much more of the whole touring thing. It's going really great.
Yeah, I hear you guys on the road a lot. I'm going to try my best to do the Essence Festival to get a chance to see you guys. That's what I'm working on.
I'm hoping you can make it.
I would love to meet you guys. I love to meet all the authors that I've interviewed. Some of them, when I was on the radio, they came in the studio, but you guys can't come in the studio because you're too far away. But I would love to meet you guys. Oh, man, I would love to meet you guys. I'm trying to pull up your website, and it won't let me. Am I spelling your name right, Stacy? Is it with an E-Y?
It is E-Y.
That's why. Okay. Let's see. It still won't let me do it. Am I spelling your last name right? I might be spelling it right.
Here's Stacy, S-T-A-C-E-Y. COVINGTONLEE
.com, right?
Yep, .com.
It's not letting me pull it up.
Well, you know what? If you Google, you can Google Stacy Covington Lee.
Yeah.
And it'll bring up the site that way as well.
Yeah, my
look, you've got me checking. I'm like, wait a minute, let me make sure there's not a glitch anywhere.
It happened to one of the other authors on here. I couldn't pull her up out of there.
No, it's there. There we go. Looking at me scared.
No, it's there. It was just where I was pulling it up from, the web browser that I was using. That's all.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's panicking. Like, hold up, they better have it in there. Wait a minute, I got to make some phone calls Monday.
I was like, we have a problem.
Got some problems right here. Yeah. Oh, my God. I really, you guys, I mean, I love talking to you guys. It's so fun. Oh, you are a beautiful lady, too.
I am. Thank you.
Yeah, you look like you, your voice matches your face. Yes.
Really? Oh, because I truly think I sound like a man. But that's okay. I'm like, oh, but that's okay. We'll call that my Tamika voice, but, you know, it just doesn't have the evil of Tamika with it.
I don't think you sound like a man. So which one is Tamika?
Tamika's going to be the girl standing to the side glaring.
Glaring at light-skinned chick. Okay.
Yeah.
I should light-skinned chick, but she is lighter than the other one. I like that music.
Thank you. I love jazz music, so.
I love jazz, too. I do, too. Oh, man, this is awesome.
I say we'll give everybody a little something to listen to while they browse my site there.
look at Stacy. Look at her. Look at Miss Lady. I like that brown dress.
Thank you. I was a speaker at Sister Girls Turning Pages Book Club in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And so I had the opportunity to go and meet those beautiful ladies. They are so warm and so welcoming. I tell you, I don't know what we would all do without book clubs. They are just everything.
Yes. They make you or break you in some instances.
Oh, yes. They are just everything. And the women there in Tennessee and Chattanooga, they are just awesome.
Man. Now, let me ask you something. I think, do you do the Telesoma Book Festival in Dallas? Was it Dallas I went to? I did that.
I have not done that one yet.
Okay.
I have not done that one yet.
I basically really had stopped doing everything because I start messing with the radio. When I put my show on the air live, I got syndicated. I kind of got away from my writing, and now I feel like I regret doing that. I stopped writing, and I started focusing on giving back, and my thing was to give back to the authors, giving them a platform to talk about their books, because a lot of the authors I talk to never even been on the radio, never even had, nobody ever asked them to do any type of interviews or nothing. They just got these wonderful books out there, and nobody's talking to them. And I thought, I said, you know what I could do? I could give back and just, you know, invite them on the show, let them talk about their books. And that's what
and
I love.
And we appreciate that. I mean, you give us a voice, you know?
Yeah.
You really do. You give us a voice. You give us an opportunity to share our work. I mean, because, you know, you can write a book and it can be beautiful and wonderful, but without outlet, you know, like you provide, you've written a beautiful book just for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no fun in that, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And if the people don't know that you got a book, and they don't, and a lot of people, believe it or not, a lot of authors don't know how to advertise, they don't know how to market, and they don't have anybody helping them do it. Believe it or not, they're writing.
Oh, I believe it. It is very much a learning process. I am learning so much now. With my new publisher, with Delphine, it's a process. And people think, you know, oh, you can write a book and that's great. Well, I don't know about every other author, but for me, I can honestly say writing a book, that's the easy part, because I sit down at the computer and I can just start writing. The story takes a life of its own. It takes on a complete life of its own. And so I sit down and I write, and honestly, because I love it, and I guess that's just how my crazy brain works, it just kind of flows. That's the easy part. The hard part about being a writer is getting the word out and letting people know that you have a book out there that they will love, that they will enjoy. It's gaining those followers. It is learning to market yourself. It is learning to, you know, build your brand. And I got to tell you, Delphine Publications is amazing. They're amazing at that.
Everybody I've talked to said the same thing. Everybody, I have not heard not one negative thing about Delphine at all.
Tamika Newhouse, she's pretty awesome. You gotta give her props. Absolutely.
Yep.
And so it's still, you know, a learning process, and I'm out here now and I'm loving it. You know, the traveling around and getting the word out, and it's great, you know, but it is a learning process. The thing is whether people are willing to take the time to learn about the marketing of their work.
Doing
the writing, that's the easy part.
Yep. And see, a lot of people are like, well, I can't leave. My husband's not going to let me go there. My boyfriend, he got to go with me. Baby, if this is about you, it's about you. I mean, you, it's, and writing is like art. It's sacrifices. You have to Have some, I mean, there has to be sacrifice in some way if you want to live your dream. And lots of people don't understand that. You can't, if you're not willing to take the step of maybe you have to take off work and do a book signing, or maybe you have to take off work to go out of town or visit a book club or something, you have to do that. That's what you have to do. I mean, it's not about you.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people don't understand. They don't get the picture. Do you think that you're supposed to sit at your computer, right, and the book's so magically supposed to get out there and everybody's supposed to run to you to get copies and stuff? It doesn't work like that. And another question
not.
I want to ask you, too. You decided, is this your first book? Now, you said when you were working, you were writing manuals. But is this your first book?
This is my first book.
Okay.
I've been writing since I was 12.
Okay.
And so I have gobbles of short stories, but this is my first novel.
Okay.
And, you know, and it's funny how you were just talking about people not, you know, being willing to get out there and make that sacrifice. It's also about having somebody there to support you in your dream.
Exactly.
You know
exactly.
What I mean? I wrote this book, and honestly, when I wrote it, I just wanted to see it. This is actually a re-release under Delphine Publications, because after I wrote this, it was like, I just want to see it in book form. And so I went the self-publishing route, and it didn't work out for me. Who I teamed with, it wasn't really ideal, so it didn't really work for me. But to have someone there still who was willing to invest time and money to help me see my dream come true, that was wonderful. It was wonderful. And the travel thing, a lot of trips I'm making by myself. When he can, my husband is, you know, he'll go with me. We just got back from D.C. We actually made that a family trip, you know.
Uh-huh.
My husband and my son went, you know. It's investing in yourself and having somebody with you who's willing to invest that time and, you know, help you see your dreams come true. But now, if you're not willing to step out there and make certain sacrifices, you can never honestly expect for anyone to put more into your dream than you're willing to put into your dream.
That's right. That's exactly right. I'm glad you said that. That is so right. Now, you answered a question I was going to ask you about self-publishing and dealing with a publishing company. Right now, I self-publish. I've had some bad incidents with publishing companies that wanted to do my work. And I kind of say, okay, if they can come up with something I can, you know, work with, I'll do it. But most of them, I can't do them. So I just basically self-publish. Maybe one day somebody might hear my stuff and might want to pick me up or whatever, but right now I self-publish. It works for me. It doesn't work for everybody.
Right.
I hear a lot of people prefer a publishing company over self-publishing because it's more work in self-publishing than it is when you're doing it. And like you said, you have to make sure you're with the right people, too. Before you do it, when you're doing self-publishing, you got to know what you're doing. You got to do your homework. Like,
absolutely.
They think that, you know, oh, I can just write in it. No, you got to see what's best for you.
There is a ton of work in self-publishing.
Yes, it is. And
it is.
I think I'm glutton for punishment.
hats off to you. I tell you, it's hats off to you. But it kind of goes back to the whole Blazer Trail thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know my trail, and my trail
is not blazing that way.
The writing, I tried to blaze the self-publishing trail. It was just a bad experience for me. It just didn't work for me, you know. And that's why I take my hat off to those that do and that can make it work for them. You know, that is awesome. But for me, I just, you know, I prefer to have a publisher. And because, again, I know that with my still, you know, young son and, you know, other things that I also have going on, and also with
you know, having sickle cell disease, that can mean a lot of time, a lot of hospital time, a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So if I'm unable to do things, if I'm self-publishing and I'm unable, I'm in the hospital, I'm sick, or I'm, you know, having some of that downtime, then that means my company is on complete downtime.
Exactly.
Who can afford that?
Nobody.
You know?
You can't at
Who
that
can
time.
Afford that? Yeah. So...
Go ahead, babe.
Oh, no, I was just saying, so this is, it's just all about what works for each individual and knowing that path.
Exactly. It was one more thing I wanted to ask you now that we were talking. Now, I know what it was. Have you thought about doing your own publishing company?
Thought about it. But it's just, but honestly, it's just not something that right now, I'm not ready for it right now. I can honestly say that. Because, it's knowing your place, where you are, what's going to work best for you right now and for the right now. That's not to say that it won't come later on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one thing that we all want to do is to grow and mature and become better at what we do. We want to affect our craft. We want it to just improve. So that's not to say that it won't happen later on down the line, but for the here and now, you know, for the immediate future, for the, you know, foreseeable future, it's not something that's going to happen, anytime soon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like a good idea, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it is probably more work than the self-publishing is, too.
I'm so sure it is.
We'd have to get Tamika to do that, huh?
You know what? It's so funny. I remember having a conversation with Tamika, and it was about being, everyone knowing their role. Everyone can't, finding out, do you want to be the boss? Do you want to be the this? Do you want to be the boss over everything? Do you want to be the boss over just your part? Do you, it's finding your footing. And it's like, I'm going to let you have your footing. And right now, you're Delphine, and we're there with you. We're strong, we're author strong, and we're going out there and making it happen. And for now, I'm boss over Stacy, and these
that's
are books
right.
that Stacy's pumping out.
And that's all I can do.
It's boss over my house.
Well, Stacy, I've totally enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for your time. Oh my God,
Thank you.
Oh,
this has been an awesome conversation, and I appreciate your having me on.
Thank you again, and you guys, you can get a copy of Knife in My Back on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and also on StacyCovingtonLee.com. You guys, check out the website. Thank you very much, sweetie, and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.